the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas are with us, but before we hear from them, let's hear a little bit of Donald Trump speaking to Republicans in Florida last night.
We took a little excursion because we felt we had to do that to get rid of some evil. And I think you'll see it's going to be a short-term excursion. How good is our military, right? Amazing. How good? Short-term. Short-term. Thank you. They're great. You know, we all together, in my first term, we rebuilt our military. And I didn't know I'd be using it so much in the second term, but we have a military like no other. It's not even close.
So, short-term excursion, as he calls it. Let's hear, though, what the War Secretary or Defence Secretary or whatever you want to call him, Pete Hegseth, had to say today about today being the most intense day of the war so far.
Today will be yet again our most intense day of strikes inside Iran. The most fighters, the most bombers, the most strikes. The last 24 hours have seen Iran fire the lowest number of missiles they've been capable of firing yet. It's a laser-focused, maximum authority mission delivered with overwhelming and unrelenting precision. We will not relent until the enemy is totally and decisively defeated. But we do so. We do so on our timeline and at our choosing. Where we are is in a very strong place, giving the President of the United States maximum options. And from the beginning, from this podium, we haven't stated how long it will take. Our will is endless. Ultimately, the President gets to determine the end state of those objectives, right? But what he's said continually, and I want the American people to understand, is this is not endless. It's not protracted. We're not allowing mission creep. The President has set a very specific mission to accomplish, and our job is to unrelentingly deliver that. Now, he gets to control the throttle. He's the one deciding. He's the one elected on behalf of the American people when we're achieving those particular objectives. And so it's not for me to posit whether it's the beginning, the middle, or the end. That's his, and he'll continue to communicate that.
But what are those objectives? Let's hear what Trump had to say about why he had brought the U.S. to war.
Number one, if we didn't go in, they would have come in after us, because I see the Democrats trying to justify it, and they're failing because the voter on the street is saying, you've got to be kidding. But I see where they're going, where they're always saying, no, there was no reason. Well, I'll give you the best reason of all. Within a week, they were going to attack us 100%. They were ready. They had all these missiles, far more than anyone thought, and they were going to attack us. But they were going to attack all of the Middle East and Israel. And if they had a nuclear weapon, they would have used it on Israel. And this was going to be a major attack. And they had all of those missile sites and all those launchers that we got rid of, about 80% of them right now, by the way. You know, they've said this about a lot of things. No other president could do some of this shit I'm doing. No other president. The things I'm doing, nobody else was going to do them. They say it all the time. Sir, could you do this? You're the only one can do it.
Marion McKeown, where is the evidence that Iran was about to attack within a week?
Well, there's absolutely none. Nobody has offered a shred of evidence that would support that. And just listening to President Trump there, he just sounds power drunk or punch drunk or something. He is not speaking like a rational president in any way. And I think the real problem here is that he and Pete Hegseth are mistaking tactics for strategy. There is no strategy for this war. They haven't enunciated once what exactly it is about. What are the goals? What's the end game? And so they keep mistaking blowing things up for winning a war, for having a coherent plan. It's crazy. And this, you know, one day they're saying it'll be over in a week, then it's a few days, then it's endless, then it can go on for as long as they want. It just seems that they should have, you know, if they were going to do this, they should have had some kind of a plan in advance. And they are literally building their bombing planes as they're going along. And it's just not a good way to behave on any level.
Cal Thomas, what do you make of what's been happening so far?
Well, I think Marion is right that nobody really is saying what the ultimate objective is. I would say that in that first soundbite you played of President Trump, where he talked about a excursion. Sounds like some kind of trip you might give away on Today FM for people having the right answer to your question. It reminds me, though, of what Joe Biden said about Vladimir Putin invading Ukraine, that it was just an incursion, like it was just going to be a short thing. And, of course, it's gone on for years. I do think that we need to take the mullahs at their word, and they appear to still be in control. They have a religious mandate, they believe, for destroying Israel and coming after the great Satan. I would ask the critics, including the Democrats who oppose all of this in Congress, for the most part, with the exception of John Fetterman of Pennsylvania, would you be okay by allowing the mullahs to build a nuclear weapon, putting it on top of an ICBM, and attacking the east coast of the United States, and in fact, countries throughout the region, and maybe even Europe? Most people, I would think, would say no. But that's what is the missing element here, an explanation of the religious motivation of these people. Now, they've already elected, again, the small council, the son of Khamenei, to be their new leader. And I'm wondering, when are the people who were out in the streets earlier, thousands of them who were killed, unfortunately, there to take over the government? I don't think the administration made plans for that, for what would come next. And I think what comes next is the ultimate question.
Yeah, because at the moment, Cal, it appears that all they're going to achieve is the deaths of thousands of Iranians, the destruction of the country, all for changing one Ayatollah Khamenei for another one.
Yeah, that's a good question. And we don't know the outcome. You know, people who say, well, it's going to be a short war. Nobody knows how long a war is going to last until it's over. Nobody could have predicted World War II. Vietnam was supposed to be a short war at the beginning. And look what it turned out to be, multiple years and over 55,000 American deaths and even more Vietnamese. So you can't predict these kinds of things. But I do think, and I'm saying in a column I've written, that the president needs to get on an Oval Office address in prime time in the evening and explain what the end game is and what the policy is in ways that the American people can understand. A new NPR Ipsos poll shows that 56% of those polled are against this war. Well, a lot of that depends, of course, on how you ask the question. If you ask the question, would you be okay with Iran having a nuclear weapon and ICBMs to deliver them on other countries, probably a majority would oppose that.
Cal, you know, you mentioned the religious fundamentalism of the Iranians. What about the religious fundamentalism that is at hold in the White House at present? And you saw the religious congregation that came together in the Oval Office last Thursday. You've heard various people in the Trump administration talk about crusades and about Lindsey Graham talking about saving the Middle East for Christianity. I mean, what's the difference?
Well, there. First of all, I don't believe there's fundamentalism in the White House. Nobody's ever made a credible case to me that Donald Trump is a fundamentalist, much less a Christian.
Have you seen the laying of hands? There were people standing around him, his eyes closed as if he was in prayer. I doubt if it was prayer. I'd say he was thinking of money or something like that. But he had all of these people putting their hands on him, crowded around him and saying their prayers. I mean, is that not nuts?
Well, it is. And I've written about this in the two kingdoms. But people have done the same thing with other presidents. Bill Clinton had a spiritual advisor, Tony Campolo, and others who came and laid hands on him during the whole Monica Lewinsky business. Jimmy Carter, evangelical, went to a Baptist church in Washington. I went down there with him on numerous occasions and got to know him a little bit. People put hands on him in the White House praying for him. So this is nothing new, and but I do think that this unchallenged worldview that a lot of evangelicals have for Donald Trump demeans the authenticity of their faith, in my judgment.
Marion, just slightly different. It's also emerged in the last few hours or so that Trump has been talking to Vladimir Putin again, that he spent about an hour on the phone with him. This was not revealed by the Americans, but by the Russians. And we've seen in recent days Trump giving out about the British not helping him quickly enough, giving out about the Spanish, giving out about others. But the Russians, who have been shown to have been helping the Iranians, yet again get a free pass. What should we say about that?
It's astonishing. And he also referenced in that bizarre meandering press conference yesterday that some countries will be having sanctions lifted. Well, clearly, I think it seems that everybody's agreed that he was referring to Russia. So Russia, in exchange for helping, the irony of this is quite astonishing because you have the Ukrainians. Now, Russia has been pounding Ukraine with those missiles, the drones that they were getting from Iran. So the Ukrainians, as a result, developed technology which is quite efficient and a lot cheaper than what America is using to try and block those Iranian drones. So they have now given this to America. The Trump sons are about to incorporate and make a fortune out of turning a Gulf management company into a drone producing, a drone blocking company. And in the meantime, Putin, who is providing assistance, intelligence to the Iranians, gets on the phone with Trump, and Trump then decides that he's going to ease the sanctions on Russia. It's absolutely staggering. It seems that there is nothing that Putin can do that will cause Trump to basically just give Ukraine the support that it needs in its war. And in a reference to what Carl said about wars going on and on, Ukraine is now in its fifth year of trying to push back Russia from its invasion of Ukraine. And the way that it's being treated by, the way Zelensky's being treated by Trump, and Zelensky is supporting America at the moment, and versus the way he's treating Putin, is just staggering. And as you say, it was Russia who pointed out that they spent an hour chatting on the phone together, and Trump had nothing to say about the fact that Russia is helping the Iranians. It's staggering.
What do you make of that, Carl? This subservience of your president to the Russian president, Vladimir Putin?
Well, there's an old line in politics, Matt, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, but it also could mean the enemy of my enemy is still my enemy. I don't understand this constant, if not praising, then certainly non-judgmental attitude toward Vladimir Putin, who's not only killing civilians in Ukraine, but has killed people in his own country who fall off balconies and who are poisoned, and journalists and other people. And now he's going shortly to China, where he keeps saying that President Xi is my close friend and we have a great relationship. Well, I certainly hope he's going to raise the issue of Jimmy Lai, the journalist who has been illegally convicted and is sitting in a solitary cell as he nears death from his illness. But, you know, this whole idea of diplomacy by personality doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And I don't think it's working with Putin, and it's not going to work with anybody else.
And what do you make then, Carl, of Trump's reliance on the likes of property developers like Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, and somebody with the track record of Pete Hegseth and Mario Rubio, as seemingly the only people he's listening to when making decisions as to what to do?
Well, I think Marco Rubio is the star of the administration, frankly. He's articulate. He can put forth policy in ways that nobody else does. But look, you mentioned Witkoff and Jared Kushner and even Trump himself. I mean, there's so much corruption. They're still running commercials on American television that Trump did some years ago, hawking his Trump watches, which are $400, $500 and more dollars. Some of the most expensive are very close to what Rolex charges for their cheapest model, something around $20,000, I understand. So I just think there's an awful lot of corruption and potential corruption, money-making on the side, and a lot of decisions are being made related to how much profit they can bring Trump family and some of his associates, either in the short term or the long term. It's something that, in my view, needs to be investigated. And maybe if the Democrats take over in November, that's what we're going to see more of.
What about standards as well, though, Carl? I'll come back to you, Marion, in a second. But Carl, when there were dead servicemen returned to the United States over the weekend, Donald Trump wore a white basketball cap or baseball cap while everybody else was wearing their suits, and he was wearing his suit and his red tie, a baseball cap at a ceremony for dead servicemen returning in their coffins. If Barack Obama had done that, if Joe Biden had done that, they would have been castigated. Why does Trump get away with it?
Yeah. Joe Biden did keep looking at his watch, of course, and was castigated for that. Look, this is a very solemn ceremony, and it is something that you should show up with a proper attire. Those stupid baseball caps that he wears from 47, 49, indicating the numbers of his presidency, USA and other stuff. I mean, it's like it would be like showing up in a golf shirt instead of a suit. It is disrespectful. I agree with you.
And apparently, Marion, he has been trademarking logos in relation to the 250 celebrations later this year to make it look as if it's a Trump celebration.
It's a Trump. It's a celebration of Trump. Well, I mean, that isn't surprising. Everything is about Donald Trump. As far as he's concerned, the entire 250th celebration, that I do remember him saying on one of the campaign events I attended that almost it had been ordained that he would be president to preside over America's 250th year. But getting back to the grift thing, there's a big, strong whiff of market manipulation around all this as well. And I'm referring here to his phone interview with CBS yesterday when he said the war is very complete, pretty much signaling very strong that it was over because the stock market was plummeting, and then oil prices dropped after he said that, and stocks rose again after that. But then later on yesterday, last night, he again struck another tone where he said, oh, we've won in some ways, but we haven't won in enough ways, indicating it's going to go on again. And, you know, there have been suggestions by people who know a lot more about the stock market than I do that millions and billions are being made by people who have inside tracks, who are selling short and then buying again, and that they're aware of what's going to be announced. And the whole thing just reeks. It really does. It's appalling. And then, of course, the other item that's now for sale, he's just brought out a new Bible aimed at veterans, which is a mere $99 each. It's, you know, it's just disgusting. There's nothing left that he won't hawk and sully. It's pretty grim, really.
But Cal, also the sort of the disregard for human life. I mean, he was laughing and joking about sinking Iranian ships. And we know that in one case in particular, it was an unarmed ship returning from exercises in Sri Lanka where it had been invited. We also have him, the only person who's trying to say that it wasn't a US missile which struck an Iranian school, killing at least 165, mainly schoolgirls. He's trying to say that, or maybe the Iranians had the Tomahawk and that they did it. Such callous disregard for life. Again, do the American people not feel any embarrassment that their president is on the world stage saying these things?
Well, I think we're beyond embarrassment in a lot of categories, unfortunately, Matt, as standards fall everywhere. But look, in wartime, accidents happen, missiles get misguided, and that was a terrible tragedy. But I think the thing that, if that is shown to be true, and it appears it was, the best thing that could happen, if Trump wants to restore some credibility, is to admit it was a serious mistake. That's what John Kennedy did on the Cuban Missile Crisis. Dwight Eisenhower did it on the spy plane that was shot down over the Soviet Union. I think transparency and honesty boost your credibility so that when you make a statement in the future, people are more likely to believe it than if you've tried to cover up the truth in the past.
We'll have Dan O'Brien after 6 o'clock on the latest on the economics of all of this. But Mary McKeown, does it look like that again we're in a taco phase? Trump always chickens out, and that he does so because of things like oil prices going outside of his control. And that's why he will promise and maybe stop this bombing attack on Iran, because of the economic consequences being something he can't control.
Yeah, I suspect that he's very close to losing his appetite for a long ongoing engagement. But the point is, at this stage, can he control it? Because he's sort of unleashed this, like he's opened this Pandora's box. And one of the things, of course, like he's trying to sell it already as it's already a victory. We've already done this, this and this. And they probably have depleted hugely Iran's missile stock. There's probably no doubt about that. They've certainly sunk a lot of their Navy capacity or destroyed that as well. The nuclear question, because he wants it both ways in that. You know, last year he apparently had a tremendous victory in June and obliterated the whole thing. And then he said it was a week away from them striking or whatever. You know, none of it makes sense. But if there is 440 kilos of enriched uranium still in Iran, then how does America get that out? There was an interview with Pete Hegseth with Major Gareth, a pretty straightforward reporter on CBS 60 Minutes. And Gareth asked, are there people already, special special forces in covert operations in Iran already. And Hegseth just smirked, and it was kind of a nod and a wink. And clearly the intention was to let people know that there are, or that there are about to be. So who knows where this is going. But the problem for Trump is if you decapitate the leadership, and then it's replaced by making a martyr of the Ayatollah, was so foolish, because he was 86, 87 years old. He would have died soon anyway. He's the leader of all the Shias, you know, worldwide. And then they replace him with his younger son, more hardline, who has just lost his mother, father, wife and son in that bombing. And he's not going to surrender. So, you know, Trump is saying he's dropped the unconditional surrender. He was saying that 2 days ago, nothing but unconditional surrender. They've quietly dropped that, which makes me think that yes, Trump probably is going to at some point, but let's hope he does realize that this is not the way to go, and to try and come to some kind of an agreement. But it's going to be hard for him to claim victory when you have the Ayatollah's son in situ. So and then what about Israel? Are they going to agree to stop bombing? Who knows?
Okay. And just to finish with you, Cal, what about Lindsey Graham? What's going on with this guy? In the last 24 hours or so, he's threatened Lebanon, Cuba. He's now threatening that next up is Cuba. He's threatened the Saudis, the whole wider region of the Arab states, and Spain. So what's wrong with Lindsey Graham?
Well, you know, the Senate doesn't make foreign policy, and neither does the House of Representatives. That's up to the President of the United States. I think in the matters you mentioned, that if Graham has convictions along these lines, he should relate them to the president in private, not to go out and be a big mouth on the various television shows and make speeches about it. It's not helpful. It undermines the exact foreign policy of the United States. And I've said the same thing when a Democrat is in the White House and Republicans are criticizing their foreign policy. Take that issue to the president in private. You don't make policy. If you want to make policy, run for the office and win it.
Thank you very much, Carl Thomas and Marion McKeown.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.